It's BBC Radio Newcastle. Thanks so much for your company this morning. Lisa with you till 2. It's coming up to 20 past 10. If you're someone who likes to know how people, you know, what makes people tick, how they think, get a cup of tea, get a biscuit, settle in for this one. We've spoken to him before. We know he's fascinating. So when we heard psychologist and author Dr. Kevin Dutton had a new book out, we snapped up some time with him. His areas of interest include the science of persuasion and social influence and some of the benefits of psychopathic personality characteristics in certain circumstances being the important point there. His latest book is called Black and White Thinking and is about the way we make sense of the world and how our tendency to lump people and things into categories can be unhelpful sometimes. I asked him why and how our minds work, and it's something he's spent his life studying.
I came from a pretty working class part of London, and my dad was a market trader. So he was like Del Boy, even looked like Del Boy, and he was amazing, actually. He could sell anything to anybody, and I guess when I was a little boy, I used to help him on the stall sometimes, and I used to watch the way he kind of dealt with people and used to interact with the audience and the crowd, and I guess, you know, a bit of that rubbed off on me as a little boy. And then eventually when I went to study psychology, there was already a bit of an undercoat, really, from me dad on my brain, as it were. And I think psychology was just a little bit of the gloss on top of that. There was one time after I was on a Saturday evening, and I was only about 9 or 10, I think, and I'd helped him on the stall. And he took me out to an Indian restaurant for dinner. And I'll always remember it, just as he was about to pay the bill, he suddenly turned round to me and he says, "Kev, if there's one thing I want you to remember in life, son, it's this. Persuasion ain't about getting people to do what they don't want to do. It's about giving them a reason to do what they do want to do." A very important lesson, that, Lisa, to anyone who's trying to persuade anyone to do something. So he suddenly takes his spoon in this restaurant and tinkles it against his glass, and the entire restaurant falls silent. And then he gets to his feet all of a sudden and he makes a speech. And he says, "I'd just like to thank everyone for coming. Now, I know that some of you have come from just round the corner and some of you have come from a little bit further afield, but I want you to know that you're all very welcome and that it's very much appreciated. Oh, and that there's a little drinks reception we'll be holding in a pub across the road called the King's Arms after this. It'll be great to see you all there," right? At which point he starts to clap. At which point, Lisa, the entire restaurant starts to clap because none of them want to be seen as a gate crashers to the party, right? Well, anyway, as we leave, said, Dad, I mean, we're not really going to the pub, are we?" And I'll never forget it, Lisa. He puts his arm around me and he says, "Course not, son. But let me tell you something. That lot in the restaurant are, and my mate Malcolm, he's just taken over as landlord. He'll make a few quid tonight." Now, can you imagine how much money I would have to pay you to even attempt to pull a stunt like that? He was a born persuader, a born influencer. And I think my interest in the subject kind of stems all the way back to me old man on the market stalls of London.
That is fascinating. So would you say you looked up to him in kind of awe, or was it just a case of, I'm observing every single thing this man does, I'm going to take it in and I'm going to try and replicate it?
Well, I suppose at that age, every young kid's father is a hero to them, you know. But I think it was later on in life, and when I started learning about the science of persuasion, that I started realising some of the brilliance in what he did. I'll give you a great example. One of the best persuasion stories I've heard recently was concerning the London Olympics, actually. 62,000 people or something like that attended the dress rehearsal of the London Olympics, but hardly anyone, this is so interesting, leaked the contents on social media. Now, that is amazing when you think about it. Now, yeah. No one really knows why that was, but speculation has it that the director, Danny Boyle, stood up and asked everyone present not to keep it a secret, but rather to save the surprise. Now, that might seem like a trivial, insignificant detail, but I reckon it's persuasion genius, or at least I'm going to give him the doubt of that, because just that simple change of word, you know, secret to surprise, just that simple shift in category, share to spoil, I think made all the difference, because we kind of like sharing secrets, don't we? But we don't like spoiling surprises.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. So this area of research then, Kevin, does this make you the perfect dinner party guest, or are you too busy taking notes on everyone's behaviour?
Yeah, funny you should say that, Lisa, because, you know, whenever I meet anyone at a dinner party, and the first thing I always say when I hear a psychologist, they say, "Can you read my mind?" I have a set response to that now. I say, yeah, I can. And you can see the colour drain from their faces. And then the next thing they say is, "Well, what am I thinking then?" And I look straight in her eyes and I say, you are thinking, can he really read my mind? They go, yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. How did you know that? And I say, because I can read your mind, that's why. So, it's funny, really, the way people think about psychologists. They think of, psychologists as mind readers and people who are constantly taking notes on them and all that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have got so many books under your belt. The latest book is Black and White Thinking. So tell me what that one covers.
When I write books, it's usually I hear a story that kind of inspires me to get started. And it's a great story. Many years ago, Russia and Finland were renegotiating the border between the two countries. And it just so happened to go right through the middle of an elderly Finnish farmer's farm. I mean, his cowshed was in Russia and his barn was in Finland. So anyway, one day the Russian officials turn up on his doorstep and they say, right, we've got a census coming up and we need to decide who's eligible. So you need to decide which side of the border you want to live on, right? This puts the farmer in a bit of a predicament because over the years, Russia's been pretty good to him, right? They've given him subsidies and they've helped him with labour on the land. But of course, you know, he is Finnish, so he's got loyalty to his home country. So after a few minutes' thought, the farmer comes to a decision. Look, he says, I'm immensely grateful for the support that Mother Russia has given me over the years. She's helped me through some very, very tough times. However, on reflection and with a heavy heart, I'd like to see out my days in Finland. You see, I'm an old man now and can't take the cold like I used to. Another Russian winter might kill me. Now, obviously, this is a very cute and funny story because, you know, literally we're talking a matter of millimetres. But actually, Lisa, the story contains a profound bit of wisdom. And that is that this is exactly the way our brains think. We think in the same way that light travels. We think in fast, straight lines, and we have to. We've got this kind of categorization instinct that enables us to simplify the world. It enables us to save time in making the decisions that we do, and it makes it easier for us to do stuff. I mean, here's an example. Imagine you went into the library and you were trying to find a book in the library, and there was no classification system in the library. All the books were just thrown all over the place, irrespective of what subject matter they covered. You would never find a book, would you? And that's exactly what life is kind of like. Everything is much of a muchness. And in order to make sense of it, we need to divide the world up into bite-sized pieces that we can make sense of and make decisions on the base of. Our brains take in as much information in a 24-hour period as the brains of those who lived in rural medieval Britain would have taken in during the course of an entire lifetime. It's amazing, isn't it? There's so much information competition out there right now, and there's so little time to take it all in that we've developed what I describe as an informational law of the jungle. In order for a message to get across these days, especially on social media, it's got to stand out as much as possible, because in order to make yourself heard, you've got to have a black and white argument. And I also think that at no time in our history has our sense of identity been so dependent on what we say, or at least what we are seen to say or believe. So yeah. The problem is that when we argue or make a point these days, we think very much like lawyers. Rather than trying to get to the truth, we try to win the argument. And as a result of that, we dig ourselves deeper into our entrenched positions.
Told you it was fascinating. And there's more on the way from Dr. Kevin Dutton in the next 15 minutes.
Just 30 seconds away from a win. Football can be...
Ava Max and Sweet But Psycho at BBC Radio Newcastle, the sound of the North East, kind of fits with my guest this morning because we're talking about how our brains work with Dr. Kevin Dutton, a psychologist who made waves when he published his first book about psychopaths a decade ago, in which he floated the idea that there are actually positive elements to being a psychopath. He mentioned his father earlier on and told me that even though he loved and looked up to his dad enormously, he thought he may well have been a psychopath.
Oh, undoubtedly, yeah. I mean, I wrote this book, Wisdom of Psychopaths, which is still to this day, I believe, the only book to put the argument out there that actually, you know, psychopathic characteristics are not necessarily bad. So when people generally hear the word psychopath, they instantly think of Ted Bundy in real life, the serial killer, or on the silver screen, Hannibal Lecter. But actually, when psychologists like myself talk about psychopaths, we're in fact referring to a distinct subset of the personality with a specific constellation of personality characteristics, such as you've got ruthlessness, fearlessness, mental toughness, self-confidence, coolness under pressure, emotional detachment, and of course those trademark deficits in conscience and empathy that you hear so much about. Now, my research shows that, you know, none of these characteristics is necessarily bad in itself, but rather it invariably depends on context, upon the particular set of circumstances you might happen to find yourself in. So, for instance, imagine you've got the skill set to be a top surgeon, but that you lack the ability to emotionally disengage from the person that you're operating on. You're not going to cut it, are you? Well, quite literally, in fact. Imagine you've got the skill set to be a top lawyer, but you lack that almost pathological self-confidence to be the center of attention in the middle of a packed courtroom. Again, it's not going to work, is it? Imagine you've got the strategic and financial smarts to be a top business person, but that you lack the ruthlessness to fire someone if they're underperforming, or the coolness under pressure to ride out a storm, or the sheer guts necessarily to take a calculated risk under pressure. Now, those characteristics, Lisa, that I've just outlined for you there, ruthlessness, fearlessness, self-confidence, coolness under pressure, and emotional detachment, comprise five core characteristics of the psychopathic personality. Now, would you say they were bad in those contexts? I certainly
not in those contexts.
My research shows that they're not. But up until I wrote that book, the prevailing kind of wisdom in society was that psychopaths are bad and the rest of us are okay. And that was a very interesting categorization. And when I brought the book out, all of a sudden, I started messing with people's categories and started saying, well, hang on a minute, some psychopaths might actually be doing good for society. And some of us who aren't psychopaths might be acting to the detriment of society. And when you start blurring the boundaries and muddying the waters and kind of opening those categories up so that there's no differentiating line between them, but rather it's a little bit grayer rather than black and white, people really don't like it. Because, as I say, we're used to this categorization instinct. Our category instinct is there to enable us to navigate the world and communicate with each other in the most efficient way possible. And when you mess around with that and you move old boundary stones, it can become very controversial, as indeed the book did become very controversial.
So basically, some of our top business leaders, some of our world leaders are more than likely psychopaths.
I have not yet, a top sports person, I have not yet met anyone in the political sphere. I have not yet met anyone in the corporate sphere who isn't pretty high on the psychopathic spectrum. You need to be high on the psychopathic spectrum because you need to be able to make tough calls under pressure, deal with people who have got it in for you, sometimes, you know, in rather extreme circumstances. And, you know, you're not going to do that if you're a shrinking violet, Lisa.
No, very good point. One other question about psychopaths. Is it nature? Is it nurture? Are people born psychopathic or can they learn to be that way?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. And, you know, without appearing to cop out, it's a little bit of both, actually. So the relationship between genes and environment can sometimes get very complicated. When you and I were at school, I'm guessing the prevailing kind of wisdom was that actually it was either nature or nurture. But these days, it's very much considered to be nature and nurture, in the sense that if you imagine genes like light switches, then various triggers in the environment can switch these light switches on and off. So our formative experiences can have a really, really big influence on our genetic code and how that genetic code expresses itself. So, you know, if you imagine a bullet and a gun analogy. So if you imagine that the bullet in the chamber is your genetic code, your DNA, in other words, it's going to need a finger on the trigger to fire that gun and make that bullet live, as it were. So you might well have, to simplify things, you know, the genetic code to be psychopathic, but how that genetic code is expressed depends very much on those formative experiences. So there is evidence to suggest, and I'm generalizing here, that if you have the genetic code, the predisposition to be psychopathic, and you come from an abusive childhood, then actually you may well go on to become a violent criminal. However, if you have the genetic code to be a psychopath and you come from a fairly stable environment and you have good role models, et cetera, then you may well become, I don't know, as Reuters once said, you may well make a killing in the market than anywhere else. So how the psychopathic DNA, how the psychopathic genetic code, as it were, by the way, I must should add here that there is no definitive psychopath gene or genetic code that predisposes you to this, but there's more of a general pattern. But how that general pattern manifests itself in everyday life very much depends on formative influences when you were younger. It's a little bit of both. Yeah, you can be born to be a psychopath, but it also depends on how you grew up and formative experiences.
Oh, well, fascinating to talk to you, Kevin. Thank you so much for your time. The new book is out now, Black and White Thinking. What's next? Is there another book in the pipeline at the moment?
Yeah, well, funny enough, Wisdom of Psychopaths is being re-released with a new introduction in January next year. And I think I'm going to write another book on psychopaths, actually. So it's a 10-year anniversary in 2022 of Wisdom of Psychopaths first coming out. So there might be a Wisdom of Psychopaths too. You never know.
You want to keep an eye on things, then you can check out his website, drkevindutton.com. And just a reminder, that latest book called Black and White Thinking. It's BBC Radio Newcastle. Hope you enjoyed that. Rod Stewart on the way, and then your third and final clue for Who's This?
The Sound of Christmas.
This year, we all know that Christmas...